Hello everyone, this is Skip Intro. I'm Ayman Rashad and in the studio with me is Ian McNally and Julian Yap. And today we're going to talk about a new movie that's coming up, which is Midway.
The Japanese are planning something big.
What's the target?
We believe it's Midway.
Washington disagrees.
Washington is wrong.
If we lose, the West Coast will burn.
We're setting a trap
at the island of Midway.
Today we're gonna be underdogs. Today we prove the American Navy isn't a joke.
So this is a movie based on an event in World War II, and it stars Ed Skrein, Woody Harrelson, Patrick Wilson, and a bunch of other people as well. Can you tell us a bit about it?
So Midway is the latest film from disaster movie maestro Roland Emmerich, he of Independence Day, The Day After Tomorrow, and 2012 fame. It details in kind of classic war, but also in disaster movie style, the events leading up to and surrounding a disaster, in this case, before the events leading up to Pearl Harbor, and then the US and Japan's maneuverings that led up to the Battle of Midway in 1942, I believe. And, you know, through this, so there's all these different characters who weave in and out. And so, like, you know, Patrick Wilson is playing an intelligence officer who was actually overseeing the intelligence for the greatest military, the greatest failure of military intelligence in the US history, which is Pearl Harbor. A lot of people talk like that in this movie. Ed Skrein is just doing... If you don't know who Ed Skrein is it Skrein? I don't know. But if you don't know who he is, he's Where's Francis from Deadpool.
He's the first Dario Naharis.
Yeah. Oh, yes, that's true as well.
The guy who mysteriously disappeared from Game of Thrones.
Yeah. And he's just got... He's a flyboy. He flies aircraft, dive bombers for the Navy. You know, his name's Dick Best. And he's just all these flyboys and multiple people who are on the... They don't really big up the fact that it's the USS Enterprise is the aircraft carrier they're on.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh, really? Yeah. Enterprise.
It's Enterprise. Oh. You know, that name has some history behind it. Mm-hmm. And it is like they ping pong back and forth between, like, you know, the... It does open promisingly. You've got Patrick Wilson talking to a Japanese admiral who are like, mm-hmm. I think the US are pulling out of Japan for some reason. I don't know the history of that. I didn't know. Maybe they had a base. I think the US forced Japan to open their borders at some point to trade. Like in the late 1800s, 1900s, something like that.
Look, the fact that this is supposed to be based on historical fact is insane because nothing in this film makes sense. If you're going into this looking to learn something, it's impossible, especially when you start out a film with a little bit of exposition to give you some background on where we are at the moment in World War II, don't do that. You maybe have to go in, maybe have a little Google of what the Battle of Midway was, because nothing makes sense.
Do they take a lot of like creative license?
No, it's just that whatever information that they try to give you, you don't take it in because there's a lot of decisions in this movie that should not have been made.
Number one, casting English Ed Skrein as American. He's got a New Jersey accent that's awful.
Every single person in this film sounds like they came from New Jersey. Nick Jonas sounds like he came from New Jersey. Darren Criss sounds like he does. It's insane. Woody Harrelson doesn't either. Dennis Quaid doesn't either. Mm. But all the youngins, yes, they do.
Yeah, I mean...
But the rest, they don't even try.
I have a history. I was trying to look up this to see which of the World War II naval movies it reminded me of. And I was looking through the list on Google and I couldn't identify them all because they just blur into like a melange of Battleship Grey and the officer khaki that they wear in those movies. You know, the captains and officers on these ships, they're always wearing like khaki outfits.
Yeah.
And I couldn't identify any of them. But I know I've grown up watching some of these and it's all like the war in the Pacific.
Yeah.
And because of that, I mean, the cheese is laid on here in 16 level stacks. But I kind of got caught up in the stuff when Ed Skrein wasn't on screen. Like when there's certain points where when the torpedo stuff is happening, where like the American torpedoes, they launch them from planes. Okay. And they're trying to take down ships. And these are not spoilers. These are things that happen. And like some of them don't work. And there's a lot of sections where like a submarine fires a torpedo and it just misses the Japanese aircraft destroyers. And there's moments like that. I found myself getting caught up in
you do genuinely feel very tense because there are some moments where they're, oh no, are they going to die? Are they going to crash? Are we going to hit the enemy craft or the ships? Like, it's a very tense battleship film.
Yeah.
More tense than actual battleship film was.
Yeah.
But there are moments when it's really weird that this is directed by Roland Emmerich, a director who's made a bunch of films before, because it's edited in such a weird way and paced in such a weird way, because you'll have your heartbeat raised because of all the action and you're going to quickly cut straight to the house.
Oh, we got to go see Mandy Moore?
For Mandy Moore to look exactly the same as she was 10 minutes ago, and she's just worried about her husband.
Yeah.
And then 30 seconds later, we're going to go back to the war. Like, it.
They do ping pong back and forth between Pearl Harbor and at sea in war quite a lot. It, like, you know, I make a joke about the Irish Navy. They're the only Navy that in the world that goes home for lunch, but it feels that way after a while in this movie. But once it got to that, once you get to the Battle of Midway and you've got the film director Ford running around, which is just a weird little nod. That's a real thing he shot.
Yeah, and then it just stops being there. It's so, everything about this film is so ridiculous. It's so, it's incredulous and also kind of fun because it's so terrible.
But it's, I think it's like, if you took out the actors and like, you could easily take, because the special effects are a bit dodgy, you could take out the actors and replace them with animated dogs in uniforms and it might work the same way. Because I think it's the battle scenes that won it for me. And also, I couldn't help it at the end when it did the thing where it's like it shows Dick Best and then has the screen like it's a real person and he's the only person who's ever sank two aircraft carriers in one day. And you're like, all this hokey stuff was real. I was expecting it to be like dedicated to the real people who did this. But like when you see Woody Harrelson as Admiral Nimitz, Dennis Quaid is Halsey. Like, if you know anything about like modern military history, there's warships named after these guys.
Yeah.
And I usually rail against people saying it's a movie you can check your brain at the door to and to enjoy. And I felt like I think it maybe just won me over. Like, I was battered by the Pacific Ocean, just wore me down. I was just like, I'm on board with this now and I'm going to go with it. And actually, you know what? Ed Skrein's not that bad. And so that shows you how much of a come down I had watching this. But I enjoyed those scenes and I wasn't tearing up, but I was cheering when those moments you were supposed to cheer.
For me, I don't want to check my brain at the door.
Yeah,
you know?
That's usually what I say.
Yeah, like, I don't want to because it is a war film. I honestly, before this, I had never heard of the Battle of Midway.
Mm-hmm.
I know Pearl Harbor and I know, you know, World War II, but I don't know anything about a Battle of Midway. If I'm going to go into this and I'm supposed to learn something that did happen that was devastating in the war and it was a very pivotal event, why am I not actually getting something where I'm actually learning what it was like? Everyone feels like they're kind of just doing a school play. I kind of expected everyone. It's shot so polished-y and so shiny that it kind of looks like they're all going to break out into song in like any second.
Yeah.
And it looks a little bit like a commercial, but it's 2 hours long.
Like a Tommy Hilfiger at sea commercial.
Basically, yeah. And it's like, I don't want to check my brain at the door because I do want to learn what's going to happen. But all of this information is kind of just, they say it, but you don't know what they're saying. There are subtitles and you're reading it, but you don't know what you've just read.
That sounds like the performance is poor. Like they're just saying the lines rather
direction,
than delivering.
It's editing. Mm. Every single decision has been so weird. But also, I had so much fun because it's a Roland Emmerich war movie.
Yeah.
It's basically just a lot of unnecessary gunfire, which, to be honest, should have shot them down a lot of times.
That's the thing. I mean, when you see the number, the things they do get right are the number of people who came back. Like, there is the fact that, like, you know, when the sky is full of anti-aircraft flak fire, they can't make the bullet explode the right area, but it's like they're trying to hit them and everything like that. Like, that comes true. And come on, when he did that kind of air skid at the end,
it was kind of super duper
cool. It's
kind
of cool. I mean, there's a reason why George Lucas took like footage from the Pacific and used that as temp tracks for Star Wars, because those planes and those action, they look cool. And also because there's no radar, there's no heat-seeking missiles.
Yeah,
it's
kind of
cinema.
Incredible.
Like, it's incredible these things happen. Like, when you see there's back, there's rear gunner engineer guys in these planes that are used, these dive bombers they have, and they literally have this machine gun that they kind of slide out in this cool looking fashion.
Yep.
Like, it looks cool.
Yeah. You're
like, I hope that's real. And so they've got, like, it is the gun port on the Millennium Falcon.
Mm.
It's basically that they're just shooting, try to, you know, they don't have to shoot through their tail. But it is that, you know, the pilot's trying to do massive maneuvers. The guy at the back is trying to shoot them down. At one point, like in every movie since Top Gun, someone's going to hit the air brakes and they're going to go right past us. They do that a little bit better, but there is like... Hollywood screeners are not Air Force pilots. They don't realize that there's only so many ways to win a dogfight, you know what I mean? And they've all been done on screen. But yeah, those, when they're in those planes and flying and stuff, it looks cool. They do shoot an awful lot of close-ups to avoid the fact that they haven't got any ships available.
This is someone who saw the trailer for Dunkirk, saw 10 seconds of Dunkirk and was like, hey, I like planes. I'm going to make my own. Oh, I really like World War II. I'm going to make my own too. And it's also someone who's really focused.
This is diet Dunkirk.
No, it's fast food Dunkirk. That's what this is. Someone wanted to take the, to them, the coolest parts of war, which is the planes and the fire and the guns. And like, let's make it, you know, you don't go in expecting it to be
Shakespeare.
Not patriotic at all.
Yeah.
Not pro-military, because it incredibly is.
It incredibly is, but I do think they balance this one moment of like horrible Japanese stuff with the, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
But apart from that, they do portray most of the generals on the Japanese side.
They try to humanize them a lot more than most war films have in the past.
It's, if you've been missing World War II movies about the Pacific, then this is great for you.
And there you go. That's our review for Midway. Let us know if you guys are looking forward to see it. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Tweet us at SkipIntroMY or write us at movies@bfm.my. And you can keep it here on Skip Intro, BFM 89.9.
Break from monotony. BFM 89.9.
Hello everyone, you're listening to Skip Intro. This is Ayman Rashad and in the studio with me is Ian McNally and Julian Yap. And earlier we were talking about the movie Midway, which is directed and produced by Roland Emmerich. So you may know him from a number of disaster movies because he's had quite an interesting career. He's done like my personal favorite Independence Day and 10,000 BC 2012 and a bunch of other movies as well. So we figured we'd talk about some of our favorites and probably perhaps least favorite Roland Emmerich movies.
We'll take a skip down memory lane while it crumbles around us and falls into a lake of lava and an alien spacecraft is crashing on us. Something that's interesting that we're looking up for this show was his Hollywood productions have made more than $3 billion worldwide,
Just
$1 billion in the United States, making him the country's 11th highest grossing director of all time.
That's ridiculous. Who's giving Roland Emmerich the time and the money to do this?
Well, I mean, with numbers like that, you can't, you know, they're saying like, well, if you've made this before, you can do it again.
Yeah, if you want to make a World War II movie, here's $100 million.
I think I'm the only one who's seen some of his early... I mean, Moon 44 was always a video that was in the VHS rental store that I meant to watch because it's the movie that's remembered for helicopters on the moon. I can't remember if they've terraformed the moon or what, and I'm not 100% sure, but like it used to be Dean Devlin and Roland Emmerich were the crew that worked together. Mm-hmm. And I think Dean Devlin is an actor in Moon 44. I'm not 100% sure, but... I might. That's another one that I want to watch again.
What was it about?
About flying helicopters on the moon. Did you not hear?
I am still reeling from the fact that there's helicopters on the moon. That's insane.
Sorry, space helicopters on the moon.
Space helicopters.
But moving on from that, I mean, he was much more grounded in his next movie, which was Universal Soldier, which gave us the delights of Jean-Claude Van Damme versus Dolph Lundgren. And like it spawned a franchise that I think they made one like a few years ago still.
Cool.
Which is just, I mean, I forgot, I didn't know he actually directed this, but this was like the perfect action movie for 16-year-olds. It has like martial arts stars. The idea is that they're soldiers who have died and brought back to life and kind of program. It's like really cheap RoboCop.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme does the splits, Dolph Lundgren goes wild, and they fight. And it's a fun, goofy B-movie, sci-fi movie. And like, it was a great way for him to make a calling card and to get, you know, start getting the money together or that he could handle, prove he could handle concepts like this.
Mm.
And this led to his next movie in 1994, which at the time was one of the heartbreaks of my young life, which was Stargate. Because by 1994, there wasn't an awful lot of big science fiction action movies. We weren't like being hit with them twice every month as we are now. So Stargate looked like Egyptian Star Wars.
Oh, okay. And I haven't seen Stargate.
You haven't seen Stargate. I mean, when you got it, what you got was aliens or Egyptians. And they come through a Stargate and they were like, the humans buried their Stargate to stop the aliens from attacking us. And then we went through
the
Stargate.
That's just Indiana Jones, Crystal Skull.
Kind of, but like, wait, they got to it before. But I mean, it spawned a TV show that was genuinely good and funny. Kurt Russell was also in it. And you could see James Spader, who was at the time was like, you know, at the height of his freak powers, doing like a straight role where he's still kind of playing a freak.
Mm-hmm.
And it was testing for Independence Day.
The 4th of July will no longer be known as an American holiday, but as the day when the world declared in one voice, we will not go quietly into the night. We will not vanish without a fight. We're going to live on. We're going to survive. Today, we celebrate our Independence Day.
I thoroughly enjoyed Independence Day. It was one of my favorite movies when I was a child. As for someone who isn't American, and watching a movie that's like America Saves the Day, even then I was still like, yeah.
And Independence Day still holds up, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
It doesn't
except
feel...
for the dog thing.
Yeah, and except for Resurgence, obviously. But it's like
I'm halfway through rewatching Resurgence, and you know what? I still like that movie. I like really? It as a sequel. It expands upon what was in the original.
And it's like, for me, I think I've steered very clear from Roland Emmerich movies. I mean, after Independence Day, which is, you know, everything's working really well in it. Obviously, that formula isn't going to work with every film. You can't just put that action and that.
As much as we'd like to, can't put Will Smith and Jeff Goldblum in every movie.
Yeah. And he has perfected it. He's made it the box office blockbuster that it is today. And we have to thank Roland Emmerich for that. Mm. But you can't have that all the time. It's not feasible, Roland. Sorry. And after, how do you follow up Independence Day?
Godzilla, which is awful. And I actually saw The Patriot at the cinema, which is Mel Gibson as a Revolutionary War hero. Who's like, I think he's the ghost. He's not the ghost who walks. That's the Phantom. But he's like, they call him the ghost or something like that. Mm-hmm. You're looking at me crazy, right? You've never seen this movie?
No, never.
I know the poster for it.
Yeah, it's him with the American flag. It's like, I'm no longer Australian. But it's like, it's the Revolutionary War. It's like, let's make it gritty. It's bad.
And then, of course, we have the incredible Naughties collection of The Day After Tomorrow, 10,000 BC. In 2012.
I saw True 10,000 BC. I couldn't tell you a thing about it.
I just remember the poster of having the woolly mammoth and the guy with a spear. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it opens
what
with
happens?
A pyramid.
Okay.
I actually didn't watch it because literally everyone around me was adamant, like, you must not watch this. It's so awful.
It's not even half as good as The Day After Tomorrow.
And then 2012. Man, I love 2012.
Yeah?
Really? I love 2012 so much.
Really?
I have a soft spot for John Cusack, to be fair.
Yeah.
Okay.
But like also, 2012 came out, obviously, in the lead up to 2012 when the world was supposed to end. And it was like, yeah, sure. Yeah. Why not? Cinema can be this terrible. We're going to die anyway. And now we just remember it. And
it's like Y2K all over again.
This is like the film that we'll remember in like 50 years, that's like embalmed in stone as being like, this predicted our future. Mm. It's a perfect film.
Luckily for me, I would never remember that movie because I only watched it halfway through and I fell asleep.
Oh no. You should watch it again.
I just have images of weird, like they take off from like, the whole coast of California is falling into the sea.
Yeah.
And then there's like ships at some point. The plan is ships. We're going to get to a ship to survive.
Yeah.
And some rich guy doesn't let them on and then they get on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The cities get enveloped in fire or water or lava or something. It's great. John Cusack's going to save everyone.
Yeah. John Cusack. I mean, I love John Cusack too. And I was like, maybe not this movie, John. Maybe not.
And that was followed by another movie, Anonymous and White House Down.
Yeah, he wavered a bit in his dedication to the disaster genre after that. I mean, I think Anonymous is about the Anonymous group, right? Or something to do with that.
I've never heard of Anonymous.
Me neither.
I mean, White House Down is, you know, it's the one that's not... What's it called?
Angel has fallen.
Olympus has fallen. There we go. See, this is as bad as Fast and the Furious movies. But he also directed 2015 Stonewall, which I didn't see because it was roundly slated for, you know, they did the historical thing of like Stonewall is a big gay rights event, and they did the thing of like, well, let's insert not a Mary Sue, it's kind of even worse than a Mary Sue character that will stick in there. And it was a white cis guy, right? And all the actors were not, you know, LGBT actors. And it was just, it sounded like a bad idea from the start.
This was the one where when the trailer came out, you know, just, you know, the stink coming off of it. You know that you can't watch it because every bad decision to be made had been made, especially one that's surrounding such an important event in LGBT history. Mm. And we're going to cast mostly cis actors, mostly white actors, to tell a story that was almost completely born out of the efforts of trans people of color.
Yeah.
Mm. And you know what? No one watched it. It didn't do very well. That's totally cool. Roland Emmerich should maybe
stick
not
to setting
touch
things
them.
On fire.
Yeah, don't go near. Because for a director who, you know, typically chooses disaster movies, why would he choose to do a Stonewall movie?
Because everyone thinks like, okay, I've made as much money as Steven Spielberg. I can do The Color Purple. And it's like, you know what? You can't. You can't do Amistad. Not everyone can get. You can't do Schindler's List. Spielberg is a singular talent. A lot of people have made that, but a lot of those people did not make Independence Day.
Well, perhaps after Stonewall, he stuck to what he knows, because then after that, he did Independence Day Resurgence.
And I like that because it does what a good sequel does. It's like, we beat the aliens. We stole their stuff. We've got flying cars now. There's other aliens that are coming to help us. We're doing, like, it grew the story. And I'm halfway through watching it. I don't remember the second half getting particularly bad. I think I enjoyed it at the time. I was surprised it didn't do so well. But I think it was just, you know, it's 20 years. People who'd watched it when they were kids, it's like, oh, that's a kid's movie. I don't want to see that. You know, that might have hurt it a little bit. Because he has come out and said, I think, in a piece that he regrets making that movie now. Which, I think, from reading it, I think he regrets that Will Smith left. Because this was supposed to be in it. And if he was in it, that movie would have been a massive success. I think without changing much, it would have been a massive success.
So do we want Roland Emmerich to stop?
Well, he's done Midway. I think he should stay away from the European theater of World War II. Mm-hmm. But why doesn't he just... I mean, the Independence Day thing, you talked about he's the maestro. He's kind of done these disaster things, but it was Glenn A. Larson, I think, was the guy who did these before him with, like, you know, I think I'm not sure if he's involved with Earthquake, but he was involved in The Towering Inferno. Mm. The Rock tried to do that skyscraper movie.
Yeah.
Mm. He should just do, like, The Towering Inferno and set it at the
Burj Khalifa.
Because
there is a market for it. There is a market for it. There's an audience for it. Yeah. He's obviously very good at it.
Yeah, just do those. Do that again. Do another one of those.
So you've basically listened to a brief history of Roland Emmerich movies. Let us know what are your favorites and least favorite of Roland Emmerich movies. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Tweet us at skipintro.my or write us at movies@bfm.my.